The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, episode 679 of IGN's weekly PlayStation show. But looking back over how the schedule has been, this probably should have just been episode 677 because it would have been a lot more in tune to what we're talking about. But, you know, you win some, you lose some. But this week we do win because we have the wonderful Tom Marks with us to talk about Cyberpunk 2077. Tom, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks.
We're also, of course, joined this week by Brian Altano.
I have not reviewed Cyberpunk 2077, but thank you for having me.
Of course, always happy to have you. And Max Scoville.
I want to play Cyberpunk 677, where you have like android arms and you're in the Crusades or whatever. Get nanomachine plagues and stuff.
The last thing we need, I feel bad enough being a Viking. The last thing we need is a Crusades game where you have to like enact the Children's Crusade, which I learned about in high school, just awful. Yeah.
Wasn't that the first Assassin's Creed? Wasn't that the Crusades?
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, that happened. I forgot.
All right. Anyway,
it's been a while. Anyway, we're, of course, here to talk about Cyberpunk. But before we get into that, I did just want to bring up one thing because I was able to pick up some packages from the IGN office that had been stored for me, and a wonderful piece of fan mail that I had been emailed back in June about was delivered to the IGN office and has just been sitting there for a while. So I wanted to give huge props to, I'm going to bring up the full name so I'm not incorrect here, but a huge props to James Van Eddy, who sent in these amazing, basically, he's going to fall. He fell off the shelf. These PlayStation cross stitch croquet. I don't know exactly what the form of stitch work is called exactly, but an original PlayStation model.
That's awesome.
That he designed, which is incredible. In addition to a PS4.
Ooh,
oh, that's adorable. That
even it's got the like the tilt and everything. Yeah, it's amazing. And then also a game case for both of them. I will let you all guess. You probably can guess. They were pretty easy for me, but I'll let you know. That one for PlayStation 1.
Gran Turismo. Nice. Jack and Daxter.
Jack and Daxter, naturally. And this one for PS4.
Duck Hunt.
Horizon.
Yeah. Huh?
That is, oh man, I love that. That's, it's like hyper minimalist. So that funny. Is so cool.
It does look like Duck Hunt, though. Tell me I'm wrong.
There's a little bit of Duck Hunt in there. I see it. You're not wrong. But anyway, James sent these in, obviously, a long time ago. And so this is a long overdue. Thank you for sending those in because they are awesome. And
it's funny. You gave him huge props and he gave you tiny props.
Very true. We're all about props on the show. Props and puns. That's what we live for. Props, puns, and punks is what we're going to talk about this week. No, of course, We are going to talk about Cyberpunk, but very briefly. Actually, so much has happened in the last week that I briefly just wanted to touch on a couple news stories before we do. But we'll have a ton of spoiler-free Cyberpunk impressions from Tom and our questions about it to Tom coming up very soon. But I did want to just briefly mention, especially because Tom, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention on a show we're on together, when we recorded a convo, I think earlier this year. I don't remember exactly when, but Persona 5 Strikers, which in Japan is Persona 5 Scramble, the Phantom Strikers, is officially coming to the West on February 23rd. It's coming to PS4, Switch, and PC. This is essentially a Musou style, so Dynasty Warriors or Hyrule Warriors-esque sequel to Persona 5. And the funny thing about this game that Tom and I had a convo about months or years ago, who can say, is that the initial trailers for this game in Japan even made fun of the fact that it essentially is Persona 5-2 by having like a 2 in the trailer that would get knocked out by the S of the title. They're very like playfully making clear that this is a direct sequel. This continues the Phantom Thieves story. Tom, and I just kind of want to briefly get your thoughts about the excitement now that it's actually on the way.
Yeah, and also the demo that they released on, I think it was the Japanese Switch eShop a while back. The thing that struck me about it was it's not just like a Dynasty Warriors game in format either, right? Like it's Dynasty Warriors in combat style, but it's not like these big open sprawling maps that you're like going and attacking bases on like Hyrule Warriors is, for anybody who's played the new one of that or the old one of that. It's like basically Persona 5 palaces from what it looks, but then the combat is just real-time Musou style within those. So yeah, I'm just so glad this finally has a US date. It's got the US voice cast back. Like I'm really excited for this. The only weird thing about it is that I've now played Persona 5 Royal since then, and it changes the very end of the game, but this one seems to be a sequel to the original end, which is like gonna be a little funny to now have that disparity, but it's a small thing.
If you didn't finish Persona 5, would this be like a huge spoiler to play?
I don't know specific story wise. I do know it like literally picks up from what the very final shot of Persona 5 is, but I don't, we'll have to see, right? I imagine it'll be fine largely like for the bigger plot stuff, but it will tell you kind of where they end up, right?
Yeah, like it features all the characters from that first game, and P5 very much like slowly introduces you to the cast of the Phantom Thieves over it. So like you basically would just from the jump know everyone. So if you see a character like the Persona 5 is really good about seeding characters that pop up later. So like if you see a character in the first 10 hours of the game, you'd probably know that they're going to become important later. But yeah, it's hard to say story wise now, but I'm excited. I'm glad to have the Persona 5 universe continuing.
Does it have UI as cool as Persona 5?
From what we've seen, yeah, it's got the same, seemingly like the same style. Obviously, like less menus in action because you're not. It's all real time action instead. But it seems like there's a lot of retention of like the fonts and the little touches of like the day calendar when you're in the real world versus like how things look in the palaces. It seems like they're retaining the spirit of what the first game was, which I love.
That rules.
But in terms of other that news came officially this week after a leak of the trailer last week, which, you know, it's December before the Game Awards. There's got to be leaks happening. Another one that felt like a company making a move maybe earlier than they intended to, a leak from a bunch of Fortnite leakers came true because Kratos is officially available in Fortnite. You can purchase him. He is only available by purchasing in the shop, which I did. He comes with a full Kratos skin that you can make do the dynamite dance if you would like, and if you own that emote. It comes with a Leviathan axe, a Mimir back bling, and his shield is his glider.
Did you say a Mimir back bling? Like
that's what they're called. They're back blings, but it's Mimir. Unfortunately, he doesn't speak. I was disappointed by that. I like the skin overall. It's really cool, and it looks great. It is bizarre to be like, hold on, let me reload my AK as Kratos. But
he's a god of war, not a god of peace, Jonathan. Let him have his Kalashnikov, all right?
I love that game just became like pop culture Smash Brothers quietly over the last like few years. Like to the point where you can write a sentence about a character coming to Fortnite and it'll take people like a minute. You could be like, Angela Lansbury from Murder, She Wrote is coming to Fortnite. The Golden Girls are in Fortnite. And people will be like, what, really? Like, yeah. Like it'd actually take you a minute to actually make sure that that's not fake or not.
I've been thinking about this. Who is Fortnite the biggest like crossover platform for that? Because I mean, they've eclipsed Smash Brothers at this point as far as guest characters go. I feel like
they on a like transmedia level for sure. Because Smash Bros. Very much has that like they have to originate in games sort of ruling. Whereas this is like, I can literally say I am going to play a game as Kratos with my friends playing as Kylo Ren and
J.J. Abrams.
as Kylo Ren, Wolverine, and Ninja.
And John Wick.
And John Wick, yeah.
That's so weird, yeah.
And Batman, Thanos, like,
yep.
Yeah, I forget.
No,
I
mean, but if you looked at who non-Nintendo characters who've made their way into Smash, or yeah. I guess, you know, random movie characters who've shown up in Mortal Kombat. It's like this, it's interesting. I really kind of want to do a deep dive on this and just be like, who has the most random guest appearances? And I think it has to be Fortnite. Like,
yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else that does this.
I can't imagine anything eclipsing it. I feel like Mortal Kombat's probably the closest just in terms of like different properties coming together. But yeah, this is like, it is that weird, so bizarre thing of like, this is a like your toy box of action figures from when you were a kid, just put into a game, because you can have Aquaman and Joker fighting Wolverine and like Finn from Star Wars. Like, it doesn't matter who owned these properties originally, as long as they made this deal with Fortnite, they're in the game. And it's,
yeah, that's forever, right?
As far as we know, I don't think they've taken any of the licensed skins out of the game yet.
Yeah. That's so wild. So like, do you remember the whole thing? The only thing I can think of
that's close is like Lego, right? Like, all,
yeah.
The more recent
Lego Dimensions.
Lego Dimensions is definitely up there. Yeah.
And I mean, speaking of toy boxes, Disney Infinity did a fair amount of different characters, but they were all under the Disney umbrella. I was gonna say something. I totally had a brain fart there. Apologies.
No, it's all good. I mostly wanted to bring it up. I know I'm probably the only one here who's still playing Fortnite pretty regularly, if at all, but it is immediately I spent the money on the skin. And if they put like Master Chief and Samus in there, that will again further like ebb away at these lines. And it's just a funny thing, because like after a generation where PlayStation was so reticent to jump into crossplay and to jump into like playing nice with the other console makers, it is really fascinating to see. I'm shocked, honestly, that Kratos is in the game and you can play as him on Switch or Xbox or PC or mobile. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I saw a couple pictures floating around on Twitter of people noticing that Kratos was on their Xbox Series X like home screen. Oof. It was like, play as Kratos now. And it's like, this is so weird. I love it.
Get him out of here. I remember what I was going to say. The supervillain support group meeting in Wreck-It Ralph, like the infamous thing about how every developer was like, no, Bowser has to be the biggest, or the Shang Tsung has to be the coolest one there. Like, everyone is trying to be like, no, our villain is the most badass. Like, you got to follow our style guide. Eventually it's like, no, just let them play together. I'm sure there've been some bizarre conversations about like, who can or can't do certain dance. I mean, I imagine that like the contingency for to be in Fortnite is like, you have to do all the things that you can do in Fortnite. Like, that's probably why we haven't gotten like Mario in there, because it's like Miyamoto is like, do not give him real guns, please. Do not make him dab.
He had guns and rabbits.
That's true.
Those weren't real guns, though. Those were like weird animal guns.
They were.
The only really interesting limitation that I've seen so far is basically that a couple of the Marvel things you could unlock last season can only be used with those characters. So it's like some of them have their own unique emote. That's like, obviously, She-Hulk. It's Jennifer Walters, or I forget her real human name, but she can turn into She-Hulk. I don't know if you're correct. I'll just say the name. You tell me. Her emote turns her into She-Hulk, or things of that nature. So it's like there are a couple Marvel specific things, but other than that, it's like I can make Kratos dance to BTS while Ninja sips tea next to him and Deadpool shakes a snow globe at him. Like, it.
And a portal to hell opens for all of us to fall into.
It always feels like I'm making stuff up now when I talk about Fortnite.
And you're all at a Travis Scott concert that's going to reveal an exclusive Christopher Nolan trailer. Like, what is Fortnite anymore?
It is a platform more than a game. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it continues to evolve and maintain that relevancy, because it's showing no signs of like slowing down. It's obviously not at that like that height that we had maybe a year or two ago of it, but it's obviously still massive. There were, I think, 15 million people who tuned in to the Marvel event. So yeah, it's very interesting. Hopefully there are other company characters that show up in that, but also that just makes me really want to see what Sony would do if they had to do PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale too. but we'll see. Anyway, I briefly did want to mention some release dates. Prince of Persia remake, the Sands of Time remake, got delayed just today as we're recording from its original January release date to March. So you'll have to still wait a little while for that, but it's still not getting X-gen versions. It will be backward compatible on PS5 and Series X, but it won't have like specific versions for next-gen.
Completely forgot that game existed. Just straight up forgot.
It's probably good they delayed so that they can maybe spend some time to market it to us.
Yeah.
Especially because it feels like this is meant to check whether or not people still give a crap about this franchise. So
it's not delayed. It's just going in slow motion. It's using the sands of time to move very slowly or whatever.
But I guess if you're looking for something to play in January, the Scott Pilgrim, the long disappeared Scott Pilgrim beat-em-up published by Ubisoft, speaking of, is coming back in January. So you'll be able to actually pick that one up after a long absence of unavailability on digital platforms. It will be available for digital download in January. Last but not least, just wanted to mention there's been a lot of staffing changes as the year has ended in the video game industry. And while that sounds very dry and boring, I do think it sort of indicates where maybe things will be going over the next couple of years. Neil Druckmann was made the co-president of Naughty Dog. So obviously he has a long time standing at that studio and has been already at sort of a very high position there. But I think that's very clearly showing that, one, to me, maybe he'll take a little bit of a step back in whatever the next franchises are that Naughty Dog produces, at least like hands on. But he obviously will help continue to push the storytelling and direction of that studio as they go forward. And this is the least we've known about where Naughty Dog's heading in a while.
Isn't he co-writing that HBO show with Craig Mazin?
Yes. He is on as a co-writer for The Last of Us TV show. So, yeah. Already that will probably bring him away from whatever they're working on in the future, but very interesting to see what happens next there. But in addition to that, Quentin Cobb has now joined ZeniMax, previously had worked at Naughty Dog for quite some time, but also most interestingly recently seemed to be working at a PlayStation studio that had not had a project officially announced yet. This was a team that seemed to be coming together and bringing some really high quality talent together. Quentin has now left PlayStation and whatever that team was working on. So it's unclear what the future of that team is, or if they will ever continue to exist, or if they're just sort of disappearing off the face of the earth. But an interesting one nonetheless, but hope whatever Quentin is working on at ZeniMax is exciting. And in addition to that, a few big names from Sony Japan, including the Gravity Rush director, who was also the Silent Hill creator, left Sony Japan recently to form an independent studio, which to me is a bit of a bummer because I love the Gravity Rush series and we haven't seen anything from that team since Gravity Rush 2. Japan Studio is a really interesting one to me because right now we don't really know anything they're working on, but they are responsible for co-development on a lot of big things. Big VR projects like Astrobot, obviously Astro's Playroom came out of one of the Asobo team there, but Asobo is the flight sim people.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Thank you.
I think so.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meet space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for?
None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cybercriminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
And then last but not least, Mark Dara and Casey Hudson announced they're leaving BioWare. All current BioWare projects are still ongoing, including Dragon Age, the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, whatever comes next for Mass Effect. And of course, if you were concerned, Anthem Next is still in development, apparently. But I'm someone who's never really played BioWare games, so I'm curious to hear from any of the panel who has had much experience or maybe just, you know, has been following the company. Do these two high-profile departures worry you or concern you in any way, or does it sort of seem like this kind of just happens at BioWare a lot?
I mean, this is like Casey Hudson quit this job twice. That seems concerning, right?
Yeah.
Then again, like they kind of were like, oh, it's business as usual, and they weren't really like doing that what you think they were doing. But that sort of feels damage control-y. I think that like these are two franchises that probably aren't I don't think the average gamer is the most confident about the future direction of them currently. And this doesn't exactly imbue more confidence in the future of those games. So like it's not great. It doesn't seem like it's great. But then again, who knows? I have no idea.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. It's especially hard to tell because people who have been at a company for 20 years, you know, leaving, I think can easily fall either way, because being in a company for 20 years is a long, long time to be at a company, and you could just be leaving because you want to do other things, or you've hit the top of where you can go and you like want something different than what you have. Like there's a lot of reasons to leave that late in. But also it could be a sign of something like company culture shifting, right? And you just don't want to, like, it's not the same place you thought it was or anything like that. I think it's really, because it could be so many things, it's really hard to speculate on what it actually is in this case. But we can at least, and it's an easy trap to fall into, I think, to say, oh, BioWare's been having trouble lately with some of their things and people have been kind of unhappy with what they've been doing with Anthem and that sort of stuff. This must mean something about that. And I think it's kind of too hard to tell from the outside to really make that, draw that line.
Yeah, I agree.
And yeah,
Jonathan, you forgot the biggest staffing news of the week, which is that Crash Bandicoot is now the CEO of JNCO Jeans. And that
come true.
That we know for sure is a great decision for him. It's great for the company. He said that he wants to make the legs even bigger on the pants. So,
but his legs are so thin.
He's got big embroidered Wampa fruits on the back pocket, and he's going to have all sorts of exciting new wallet chains.
This we know top to bottom. Great news for everyone involved, especially fans of those big JNCO jeans.
You had me at embroidered Wampa fruit.
Going back to the BioWare thing, I want to talk about BioWare. I don't know. I feel like it's been a cool minute since they. Dragon Age Inquisition was 2014, and then we got Anthem and we got the Mass Effect that nobody talks about. And I just can't help but feel like that's. I mean, they're chipping away at something over there. They're clearly working, but it's also, I think it's sort of a ghost ship at this point. Like I think people sort of champion the name BioWare as this like, you know, pinnacle of RPG storytelling. And I mean, it's been a minute, and I can't help but wonder how much of just EA politics, and not to be just all like EA is the worst. I hate them. But like the kind of games that they tend to ship doesn't really seem in line with what BioWare wants to do. Like they either, you know, are making, you know, super hyper AAA, you know, games as a service sort of sports shooter type stuff, or they're doing sort of more smaller, almost experimental stuff like, you know, A Way Out or the new Medal of Honor VR game. And it, like they, like, I don't know, EA just seems like they're obviously it's a giant ship, so it's kind of hard to steer. But it just doesn't seem like the stuff that BioWare typically wants to do is really in line with what they're doing, unless they are suddenly, you know, turning the wheel as hard as they can, being like, you know, The Witcher 3 is the amazing selling game. Everyone loves Cyberpunk, and you know, Ubisoft ships an open world RPG every year. Like, what? How do we do one of those? Like, we've got to, you know, BioWare get it, you know, kick it in the ass or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. It's also, again, it's weird that Casey Hudson keeps like leaving and coming back and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's I was looking back at our stories and I had forgotten I wrote the story of when Casey Hudson came back on IGN a couple years ago. And it's one of those things where it's like, we could be here in a couple more years. And he's like, I have returned again to lead Mass Effect 5 or whatever they call it. Probably like God of War, it'll just be called Mass Effect. But it's yeah, it is a very strange time. I totally agree with Tom on that note of like, because of the long-standing history that those two have with the company, it is very easy to immediately want to go into like speculation 101 of like what could be wrong, what could be going on. But it is also very possible these guys have just been at it in this, you know, specific genre or at this company or in their roles for so long. Even if Casey recently returned, like obviously he's been there for a long time overall, maybe they just want to do something new. And I do think these are definitely games that, at least from what I can tell, especially from the Dragon Age side of things, because we know that game seems to be at least in some proper form of development. Like, I think Dragon Age is more than the sum of one single person's creative vision, is pretty fair to say. And so what the team that's left will do will be really interesting to see. But yeah, I agree with you, Max. Like, BioWare needs to prove itself again. It has definitely been a minute since they were the top. They were what was considered the standard bearer. And that feels like what they want to work toward again. But yeah, it's that, will EA let them?
Also, the other thing is, a lot of my understanding is a lot of game development work is contract based. And I mean, it's probably not a coincidence that it's the end of the year and we're hearing these people departing for other things. Like, maybe they had a year long contract. There was, I think it was one of the head guys working on Halo Infinite. He was the director, and that's had like a bunch of directors kind of rotating, which I don't know if that's, you know, indication of what the project's doing, but he still works for Microsoft. They just put him on something else, which is, you know, interesting. But again, it was like, I think he was like, my contract was up or something to that effect, which is there's also, I mean, people get poached. Like, people get approached about like new projects that are either, you know, they pay better or they sound more exciting or lucrative or whatever, and you know, who knows what that entails.
Yeah, it's the company is certainly at a point where I don't think we've seen enough of what's on the table for them to come, where these departures can be any clear sign of like the stability of what those projects are. It's good to know everything's continuing. But yeah, BioWare is a really interesting case that I'm excited to see where things go for them in this next generation, because obviously it's a name people love and want to see do well, but it's been a while. So we'll see. We know the new Dragon Age will be at the Game Awards in some capacity, so hopefully we'll see something interesting there. But until then, speaking of the Game Awards, before the end of the show, I forgot to put this in the run of show. I'd like everyone to come at me with one outlandish or reasonable PlayStation guess of what will be shown at the Game Awards to see how horribly wrong we are next week. But in the meantime, as you think about that, I do want to talk, of course, about Cyberpunk 2077. So, Tom, you reviewed Cyberpunk 2077. I will, of course, defer to you in explaining sort of the overarching feelings about your review. But just sort of to couch the conversation, you played only on PC. You have not played the console versions, PS4 or Xbox. So you don't have impressions of the console version. And it seems no one does. All the reviews wide seem to have been PC only. So yeah. No console impressions. But because this is such a major game coming to PS4, the PS5 version won't be out until sometime next year. It's still, I think, obviously a game we want to make sure we have well covered and can, you know, talk to the audience about. So to kick off.
There was an outlet that did get exclusive rights to the console version, and it's Best Buy. They apparently sold.
Yeah.
They were the ones that got to play. People bought the game early and were able to play it. But other than that, like, no one else, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
As far as we know.
Yeah. As far as we know, all reviews were PC based. And so, Tom, why don't you hit us just from the top, sort of your overall thoughts on Cyberpunk 2077, and also just sort of a couching in like how much time you spent with it before the review.
Yeah. Okay. I played 45 hours of the game before writing my review and getting everything ready for people to look at and read. I think my three headlines for it, mm-hmm. if you want the quick ones, are it's excellent, it's shorter than I expected, and it's extraordinarily buggy. Those were like the three big takeaways that I think I would give to anybody. And I'm not saying it's too short. I thought it was a really, really fun, really full of choice, incredibly compelling RPG. I think it's beautiful. I loved the world. I loved the stories being told. I initially wasn't crazy about the combat, but kind of as more options opened up, I was even really into that. The side missions are really fun. You have just an incredible amount of choice in the world. Like, I was very, very impressed with it overall. It's not perfect by any means. There are little problems here and there. I don't like how some of the mission stuff is presented, for example. But, you know, like, it largely, I thought it was a really, really, really amazing game. That said, I played this on the PC version, so we won't know how it runs on PlayStation, like you said. But, man, this game had issues. And it didn't just have issues for me. It had issues for, I think, basically everybody who reviewed it was like, the bugs were a thing they brought up. They were so noticeable. And it has to be said, at least, that for the large part, I only saw mostly visual issues. Things like characters T-posing, characters in wrong poses during like dialogue scenes, characters referencing objects that were invisible, right? Like things like that. I had moments where like I would get into a car, I would sprint up to a car and get in it, and then the entire drive I would be in the run, Bob, but like sitting in my seat. I had times, lots of times where, you know, you'd get phone calls that would interrupt and overlap with dialogue in a story mission. It was just a lot of stuff like that. That's not like game breaking, but is very annoying. Right.
And that's an interesting, I feel like in all the reviews, they all did bring up the bugs, but I didn't see anybody really talking about them being fully game breaking, just more immersion breaking and more like prevalent and noticeable, but not like, you know, they don't brick your save file or something.
Yeah, there were a couple moments where I would like, I had to like reload the game or reload a save because like a quest trigger wasn't happening or something like that. And it would just like, I couldn't proceed in the quest. But that was like pretty simple stuff. And it was also way rarer than like broken poses, which was happening pretty much constantly. So yeah, like for the most part, this is a playable game. It's just like, it's really a shame because a lot of the conversations that you're having are like really deep and really well written and really engaging. And then the character you're having them with will like, you know, be sitting at a table with you having this conversation. And then suddenly their character model will just like stand up on the table and then go back down into the seat and be in the wrong pose. And then their mouth won't move for the rest of the conversation. And like, that's not stopping you from enjoying the story, but it is like ruining the mood in a really like tangible way.
But there's like significant day one patches coming for this game, right?
Yes. So that should be said. We played before the day zero patch that's coming, right? There's going to be a patch that will do that. CDPR indicated to us that patch would focus on stability and performance primarily. So we haven't been told, like sometimes developers will say, this is what's going to be in the day one patch, right? Like very explicitly. We haven't been told this time that like T-posing will be addressed. And honestly, I think there are so many bugs that like probably they aren't going to be able to address those things, all of those things in a day one patch. So yeah, it is fair to say we didn't play on the version most people will be playing on, but also like I am nervous if it was giving me slight performance problems, you know, on a high-end PC, like I'm nervous about what this is going to look like on a launch PS4, you know, like that's speculation completely because we haven't seen it or played it, but like this could be a pretty rough launch. And I think that's probably why they're like, might be part of why not a lot of people have played it on console yet.
And yeah, just to set the expectation, Tom, you were playing on a pretty powerful PC as well.
Yeah,
right?
I had an RTX 3080 GPU, which is basically the best you can find if it was in stock right now. And like, it was running mostly okay, and they did actually do a patch mid-review process that addressed, that like partially addressed one visual bug, which is that guns will just be floating in the air after you kill enemies, which after the patch, that pretty much was like, it was still happening, but not
as frequently.
It is
the future. That's not that weird. They're probably floating smart guns. Yeah.
Fair. There Cyber are actually guns. Smart guns in the game, which is very funny. But anyway, but like, regardless, the bugs are a big part of it that I noticed and really did bring down the experience. But like, I don't want to harp on them too much because it was like a really fun game. Like, I really, really enjoyed it. And it, you know, I played 45 hours of it and I need a nap and I'm going to take a break. But then like, there's still stuff I want to do in the game and there's still quest lines I want to pursue. And like, I'm going to go back to it. Right. Like, that's a good sign that you play 45 hours in a week and then you're like, oh yeah, I want to keep playing this game eventually. You know, it's like, it's good.
Brian, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off before, but wanted to let you chime in if you're...
No, I was going to say, I do think it is concerning that pretty much nobody outside of, like, you know, people who bought the game at Best Buy and a couple of highly curated, you know, released videos directly from CDPR have seen what the consoles... versions of this game look like, because I do feel like a significant portion of the audience is going to come from consoles. Yeah. And it's kind of frustrating to like not be able to like tell our PlayStation audience, this is what the game plays like on PlayStation, because we just don't know yet. And so like, I would say personally, and maybe this is editorializing a bit, but like, if you have a PS4, maybe wait a few hours like to see what this game looks like. I mean, you don't have to buy it the second it unlocks. Many of you probably already did, which is like what I think is like kind of disingenuous about the entire process, is that like, this is a company that has no problem taking the money from the consumers already. And that's how pre-orders work. It's how they've always worked, but not really giving them in return this sort of peace of mind of knowing what they're actually purchasing. And I saw a lot of chatter about this on social media because I tweeted about it. And a lot of people were like, oh, they're probably just trying to keep spoilers away. And I was like, they let Tom play the entire game on PC. Like,
yeah, they specifically asked us not to spoil big story moments, which we wouldn't want to do anyway, right? Like, that's a fine thing. But this is a little inside baseball, but like, it is very weird that the review embargo that went up on Monday didn't allow anyone to use their own captured footage for the game, right?
That's like, super weird.
Like, that's not a thing that I think I've ever experienced really in game reviews before. We don't know, of course, the exact reason for that, but like, it is very, it seems like the easy speculation is like, this game is buggy and they didn't want to show people that for as long as they could, right?
Right.
And like, again, that's just my speculation, but like, yeah, I agree, it's hard to tell people that they should probably wait for on a game that has been this anticipated and this delayed and this is this exciting. But like, at the same time, if the support CDPR gave The Witcher 3 is any indication, this will be a much better game in 6 months, right? Like, it's going to probably be patched a lot over that time because they have proven that they don't walk away from their games when they have issues. And so like, I'm excited to see what it's going to look like, but like right now it's pretty rough, at least on PC.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, it's sort of like you're only rewarding yourself by waiting. Obviously you do run into the issue of like, you know, running into a spoiler online for something that you're very excited for. That would probably be the biggest detriment, not being part of the conversation, you know, day and date and having some big quest line spoiled, which totally sucks. But this is not a game that they're going to just like kind of crap out and run away from. Like, they're going to be consistently updating this thing for years. Like, it's going to get mountains of DLC most likely, or definitely. And so I would say, like, if you haven't already bought it, wait to see how it runs on your base PS4 or your Pro. I mean, I've also seen a lot of confusion, which, and you obviously can clear up here, there's no PS5 version of this game yet.
If you even go onto the official cyber, this is the thing we had to double check for the review graphic, actually, when we say like also available on, because if you go to the official Cyberpunk website, there's a pre-order button and it says available on PC, Stadia, PlayStation 4 and Xbox. And then in small print below it, it says also runs great on Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5. Like there's no upgrade patch as far as we know, and no official version until sometime in 2021. We don't know when yet. So if you're playing this on PS5, you're literally just going to be playing the backwards compatible PS4 version. And obviously it will run better because the PS5 is a stronger system, but it will not have like ray tracing and all those upgrades that we can assume will come with the PS5 official version.
I thought I saw a thing today about how there is some kind of a patch, or there's some kind of hinge. It's not just a straight backwards. I mean, it isn't made for PS5, but it does something in the same way that, you know, the PS4 Pro will have like performance or,
I don't know that specifics, but I imagine that is true, that it will definitely run. It'll be better on PS5, of course, but like, they're not officially like, it's not getting the PS5 upgrade until sometime in 2021.
I wanted to ask you about like sort of this game aesthetically as kind of like a living, breathing world. Did you get that feeling? Was this like a place that you really just wanted to spend time in? Because I've seen a lot of people talk about this game and me too, as sort of like this like escapism. Like this is a big new open world game. It's not, you know, future GTA, which I think a lot of people thought it was. It feels like it's a little bit more like, you know, I think it needs to be reiterated. Like this is an RPG. It has guns, but this is an RPG.
Definitely.
Right?
It feels far more like The Witcher than GTA. Like far, far more. There's a lot of talking and walking around in this game for sure. The living, breathing world thing is interesting to me because I did see this criticism in some other reviews too that I, you know, are totally valid in their opinions. That's great. It's like there's this. It's like the world of Night City is so incredible to me. It's beautiful. The scale is amazing. It's dense. It's rich. Like I really do love it. But also, it's not like it's not really like a massive step forward in world design as much as it's just great world design, if that makes sense. Like a really quick example I'll give you is like there's food stalls everywhere in certain areas, but like very few of them are actually like you can't actually buy food from them, right? They're just set dressing. Or there's no stealing in this game whatsoever. In some RPGs, if you take somebody's thing from behind their desk, they'll get mad at you. That doesn't exist here. And similarly, like there was a dude on the side of the road who was like on his phone next to his motorcycle. And he was just like talking on the phone next to his motorcycle. And so I just walked up to him and took his motorcycle and drove off. And he like got mad at me for driving too close to him, but not for stealing his motorcycle. Right. So like in terms of like it being like a quote unquote living world, like it doesn't really feel that way, but it is just such an incredible place that I loved driving around it, and I loved seeing new things in it, and I loved like experiencing stories within that world, even if it wasn't like the next coming of RPG world design, if that makes sense.
No, I was going to say that's actually really interesting to hear, because it's like I've seen a lot of comparisons to Fallout, but in Fallout games 10 years ago, you could walk into a town, take something off of somebody's desk, and then be at war with that entire town for like a week. I made that mistake a lot of times, you know, like I'd have a few drinks and then start playing Fallout and all of a sudden I'd be like, I can't go to that town anymore.
Yeah. But what I will say is like one of people's favorite things, if I may project a little, maybe because it was one of my favorite things about Fallout 3, was the megaton thing, right? Spoilers, that decision about you get control to decide if this city is still there the next day is so cool. And I think the thing that's really impressive to me about the amount of choice and some of the story stuff in Cyberpunk is like, no, you're not literally blowing up sections of the city, but like you have you have similar amounts of control over characters' lives, like in almost every quest. Like I got a dude fired in one quest, and in the next quest, like he like didn't have a job and we were still working together. And if you didn't get that dude fired, like, you know, that would be a different experience of that character as a person. Like it would, you know, it's really
it's amazing.
Yeah. There's a lot of choice there in a way that it doesn't feel like Fallout necessarily, like that feels a little bit more scripted in Fallout, I guess, even though it is still scripted here.
Yeah, Max, go ahead.
I mean, I'm excited about that. I guess I'm really curious about this. I don't even know where to start, you know.
Yeah.
It's honestly seems almost daunting because like it starts right off. Like, I mean, I have a hard time being like, oh, what sort of character do I want to play? And this one, they're like, you pick from three different life paths right out the gate.
Yeah.
Did you play with more than one of those, or did you just kind of do one main character and then?
So I did Corpo in my 16-hour preview, which I talked about on the show a couple weeks ago. And then I did Street Kid for my actual review playthrough. So I haven't seen the full extent of how they differ, but I did get a different kind of taste. And I will say, this is, I think, something that I said like on that last show, but like that decision is huge and big, but it's not like the most monumental thing in the world. Like, it really does only affect like the first half hour of the game and then like dialogue options from there. And it might, I think it does have an effect on some other quests later, but not like this is a completely different video game sort of amount of effect.
They didn't make three separate games that exist in the same city.
No, exactly. And also on top of that, like even a lot of the times, some of the time the like dialogue that is specific to like being a street kid, and this happens too with like skills, like if you have a lot of engineering skills, sometimes you get special dialogue options for it. Some of those dialogue options don't even change anything compared to the normal dialogue options. It's just like more role play of being like, oh, my character's from the streets, so he would like just talk differently in this situation. He would say different things. He would have more context for the discussion, which I liked, because like sometimes it does have a significant outcome and change, but other times it's just like flavor of kind of how you're picking your character, which I really appreciated.
Yeah. That's, it's not like, just like characters being like, are you hungry? And you're like, no, thanks. And then like an hour later, like you're weaker or something like that. Right.
Right.
Like
sometimes.
I mean, that's something to keep in mind. This is a role-playing game. Like they have not made any secret of that. I think some of the marketing definitely skews a little bit GTA-ish in the fact that it is at a glance a first-person shooter. But yeah. Like this is rooted in pen and paper origins, and like that fundamentally has a certain amount of imagination you have to have as a player. Like you have to, I mean, even I feel like even The Witcher had that, where you know, you would every item in that game was a little bag, and then it would have like a small JPEG in your menu to show what it actually was. But like it wasn't like, That was one thing that was always a little bit jarring for me after playing something like Fallout or Skyrim, where every object is like visually represented in the world. Then jumping into like even something like Far Cry, where you like you loot items and it just tells you what they are. And there's maybe like a little graphic that goes with it, but it doesn't feel like they're actual like tactile things within the universe. And that kind of comes to you on the player to be like, okay, like I stole a bunch of Zippo lighters and old wristwatches from this man's corpse. Like that's, I didn't actually pick them out, but you know.
Yeah.
No, that's fair. I did want to ask sort of along the lines of the, I think the idea that it is, you know, it is rooted in a tabletop RPG. And there are definitely, you know, defined story beats within the world, but also a lot about creating your own path and finding your own way in this game. And being your version of V, what did you find most interesting about the character customization, I guess both in look and design, but it's a first person game, but also more so in the like the way you outfitted your character to be in this world? Like, did you feel like there were meaningful choices to be made when it came to how you wanted to approach situations, be it stealth or action, like the type yeah. of your arsenal, all of that sort of stuff? Can you talk to a little bit?
Totally. I mean, like that's a really cool part. The character customization is really good, but also, yeah, it is a first person game, so you don't see your character all that much, very much at all. And also there was a weird glitch where the few moments that I did see my own character, I rarely had hair, which was like a very strange bug. But anyway, yeah, the choice of like stealth or combat or action and going loud, going quiet, that sort of thing, I really liked, especially because it felt very fluid. Like all that stuff feels like there's not a class system. So it rarely feels like you're ever locked into whatever decision you make right away. Like I didn't find necessarily a way to like respec skills, right? Like Assassin's Creed Valhalla has, where you can just, you know, get crazy deep into that tree and then just say, actually, I'm resetting all of this at a whim. I didn't find that. But I did feel like if I was going really far stealth and then I was like, you know what, I want to play actiony now, like I could just do that. And like, it was more that my stealth was improved, not that my like combat was lagging behind it, if that makes sense. It's like a subtle distinction, but it's very flexible. And I really liked that. And I also really liked that the difference between going loud and going quiet in a mission, like, could be significant depending on how you're playing, right?
So yeah. I was gonna say, just side note real quick, The Witcher 3 did not let you respec your skills initially, but I think they patched that in there later on, which is, I think, like a really kind of cool option to have. I don't know if that was part of New Game Plus or not, but I remember that was like a big thing that they added later on. So
yeah,
I don't know. The game will change, I think.
Yeah.
I plan on going against sort of like the convention and playing the game more like a shooter. Like I plan on, you know, like focusing on gun stuff. I'm not really interested in stealth and hacking as much as I am just like running a room and shooting bad guys in the head. That's fun. So how is like stuff like the gunplay and the driving, just sort of like getting around and killing people? How's that feel?
Well, so first of all, real quick, something I didn't mention in the review that I actually like, one of my favorite little details is you have in your cyberware screen, which is where you equip like mantis blades and like the double jump legs and like stronger like armor skin and weird things like that. There's some really weird effects. Like one of them that you can get for your, I think like a circulatory system upgrade, is suddenly all poison damage heals you instead. Right. And like that, like fundamentally changes how you would play that game. If you just want to like use poison grenades and like poison and heal people at the same, like heal yourself and poison people at the same time, like you could do that. And one of the things you can do in there is, if you don't care about the hacking, which I enjoyed the hacking a lot, the quick hacks, you equip quick hacks in a thing called a tech deck.
It's that a small skateboard.
Yeah. Or maybe it's called cyber deck. I don't know. Anyway, maybe it's your cyber deck. I don't know. Basically, you can upgrade that so that you can equip more quick hacks at once. Or if you don't care about hacking, you can replace it entirely with an item that instead like gives you an adrenaline boost that makes you better in combat. And so like, if you don't care about hacking, it literally still gives you options that are like, I don't care about hacking, I don't even want it, just let me shoot better. And like, you can do that. And so I think that like that speaks to the flexibility of it. The gunplay I thought was fine. It's a little bit bullet spongy, as I mentioned before. It also has a lot of like damage drop off at range, which is a little bit unintuitive at first for me. But the thing that I think is really impressive about it is like, once you get weird cyberware like that, or you get cooler weapons that have unique effects. Like I was using this rifle for a lot of the game called the Widowmaker that like could shoot through walls and also applied poison. So you could just like look at a wall and like ping each person once and then just like watch their health bars tick from behind the wall. That's where it starts really becoming cooler. And I think you can definitely play just like running around shooting people, but I would recommend still having fun with your loadout, because if you just like pick up whatever guns the enemies are using, and it's going to be less satisfying than leaning into those weirder options.
I have a question. When does it open up? Because I know like there's this sort of perfunctory 3 or 4 hour chunk of massive games where it's got to babysit you through tutorials and introduce all the different systems. And
yeah,
I guess I'm curious because like, I mean, even The Witcher took a second to get there. Like there was that sort of babysitting area.
This is spoiler free, I hope. My spoiler free recommendation is, do the main story stuff until you meet Johnny Silverhand, which is Keanu Reeves' character. Once you meet Johnny Silverhand and kind of get through the introductory stuff with him, the game basically just says go ahead and opens wide, and none of the side stuff that you get before that will go away after that point. So like, once you do that, once you get to that point in the story, it basically is the same game, but bigger and more flexibility and options. And so like, that's what I would recommend, is just get to that point. It took me 6 hours in my preview. It took me 4 hours when I was just rushing through it for the review. So about the 4 to 7 hour range to spending, depending on how slow you go. But once you meet Johnny Silverhand, you can just have as much fun with the game as you want and go wherever.
And cool. Speaking of, just on the story bits of it, how was Keanu?
Significantly mediocre. times.
By like Keanu standards or just like mocap voice actors?
Bogus.
Standards? I like Keanu Reeves in movies, but he's the weakest voice actor in this game, pretty much by a mile.
Is he in it a lot? Like, is he really as substantial as they played it up?
He's the most important character after he is the most important character after the main character. He's fine. He's not bad, but he's just like I think a lot of what is appealing about Keanu Reeves as an actor is beyond just his voice performance, and so like it just doesn't come quite across, I think, in this very well. I don't know.
But overall, I think
his character rules.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, go ahead. I have a really stupid question. You can do the genitals in the character creator, right?
Yes.
That's the thing.
Yes.
What do you do with them, and how do you see them?
That's a great question.
Like, can you just, is it like postal and you can just whip it out, or is it like, what is that, an upgrade? Like, what do you do?
Could you unequip your pants and just have dongus running around?
So when you unequip your pants, you always have lower half underwear, right? So you never see your genitals.
But is there a silhouette of the dongus?
You ready for this? Except for the fact that every time you swap pants items, the game glitches a little bit and the first one disappears before the second one reappears. And that moment you see it every time. I do not know why.
So the only way you can see the peepee is you by swapping back and forth between pants real fast.
Otherwise,
that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
That choice literally doesn't never means anything as far as I can tell with the game. I literally don't know why it's in the creator, because
I've got
all the,
so you know, as a person, what you have there.
I mean, we talked about it for 6 months. That's some brilliant ESRB marketing.
All the romance sex scenes are never show that explicitly, right? Like, they're, for lack of a better term, somewhat tasteful, right? Like, they're very soft in that regard. And so I literally don't know why that choice is in the menu.
I do.
Somebody worked very late, very hard on that.
It's so confusing to me.
Because I do think there are there's a lot of great criticism out from the review cycle from a lot of great trans critics that is worth reading about this game, because of especially of how CDPR's social presence has been mired in some pretty unfortunate and unacceptable transphobia and issues around the marketing of the game and trans identity. I think there's a lot of great criticism out there that I do not personally believe us four cisgendered men can speak to adequately or properly. And so I don't want to necessarily jump into that, but I do think it is very interesting that after all of that talk about the game having that option in there, we settled on the glitch that figures out how you can trick it into showing you the penis.
It's just so weird. It's just it's just completely inexplicable to me.
It is a strange thing. I think seeing the marketing of the game versus the reality, it feels like a very 500 Days of Summer expectations versus reality that we're just getting with this game right now. And I think a lot of the more socio-political and cultural both successes and failures of the game are going to come through once a lot more people have had both time and just exposure to the game. Because there's a lot of stuff there that I think we'll want to dive into in the weeks and months to come. Before we wrap up on this, though, Tom, any sort of just other really key takeaways you want people to have before jumping into the game that really struck with you, positive or negative?
Take your time, frankly. You can beat the game in 20 to 25 hours. I did. Don't. Just if you want to just do it, just to do it. I think that this game, the ending especially, is only enhanced by meeting more characters and doing more stuff and in kind of seeing more of what Night City has to offer. So I would say really
end in a big courtroom scene. Like a lot of Adam Sandler movies where the more characters you meet, there's the last episode of Seinfeld.
It's exactly the last episode. No, it's not. No, it's not that. It's just that I beat the game. And again, I'm going to completely avoid spoilers here, but I beat the game and expected more than what was there. And then when I went and did other stuff, I was like, oh, that's why I had that feeling. Right. not to say it gets longer or anything. I'm just saying, like, it feels like this game was not meant to be mainlined. I don't think I got a wrong impression of the game by playing it that way. I just think that, like, people will enjoy it more by just taking it at whatever pace they want to take.
Is there anything equivalent to Gwent?
Not that I saw. There were okay. no games or gambling as far as I could tell, which was a little bit of a bummer. It feeds into that idea that I was talking about of, like, the world is very dense, but it doesn't feel exactly like, not quite as like living as you would maybe expect, but there's so much to do. Like, I'm okay with not playing Orlog or whatever it is in Final Third Valhalla. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's it'll be really interesting to see. Does it feel like you have a sense of, or I guess, is there a marker of, like, how much of the world you have experienced at this point? Like, is there a percentage indicator or anything like that?
No, it's hard to tell, especially because after you get past that intro, literally the entire map is open to you, right? Mm. Like, it's not like The Witcher where you're, like, unlocking maps and going to different places. You have Night City and you can just go anywhere you want. So it's hard to tell, because it took me to, like, hour 40 to, like, find out that there was, like, basically a Central Park style forest hidden under a road in the city. Right. And, like, I literally didn't know that existed. And, like, that's super cool. And I drove by that area all the time. So there's probably more stuff I haven't seen, but I mean, there definitely is. It's just, I don't know where to look for it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really exciting to hear that there is that volume of things. And as you were saying, you're discovering this stuff so late into it.
Yeah, I think people will hear you can beat it in 20 hours and think it's a short game. And I think it is a short to beat game, but that doesn't mean that that doesn't mean you can't spend 100 hours playing this game, for sure.
If I hear a game is 20 or under, I get very happy. So that's okay to hear in my book. Before we move on, I know we are running late, so if anyone has to go, I completely understand. I'll give a second for any of that, but otherwise we can keep moving on. Perfect. We'll keep moving on. I do want to say, of course, though, thank you, Tom, for all of your thoughts on the game so far. Definitely, if you haven't already, please go check out Tom's amazing written review. It's up on IGN.com, as well as the fantastic video review that you made in conjunction with our video team. Special shout outs to Pat and Jordan from our video team, who helped you bring this all together. So definitely go check out the video review. It's on IGN and youtube.com/IGN as well. But moving on from that, of course, there are so many games to talk about at this time that I did want to jump into one that, Max, I wanted to make sure we could give you the proper time to discuss. Of course, that's Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory.
I finally jumped on the Kingdom Hearts bandwagon. I opened my Kingdom Heart to the Kingdom of Kingdom. I'm just kidding. It's Yakuza. I'm late to the party.
I will take this opportunity to say I am accepting applications for a new friend.
You're Kingdom Heartless, Brian.
You're Kingdom Fart, Max.
All right. So super late to the party on this. I guess Yakuza Like a Dragon, there was the whole weird thing where it was next gen exclusive for Series X, and it also came out the same week as the PS5. So I was focused on all that stuff and just kind of just late to the party on that. And I finally jumped into it because we had our big sort of game of the year discussion, and Mitchell Saltzman was banging that Yakuza drum, which is, I'm usually the guy in the game of the year meetings being like, guys, you should play Kiwami too. It's really good. And he was like, this is really good. This is awesome. Check it out. And I was like, you know what? I need to check this out. And I don't know. There was obviously a lot of like kind of marketing buzz surrounding it. And I, you know, was tied to some like, sponsored videos and interviews and stuff to the point that there's like a little bit of sort of, you know, fatigue around it for me. And I jumped into it just being like, I'll give it a shot. And that was on Saturday night. And I'm about 20 hours in. So not like Tom levels nice. If I seem at all out of it today, I arbitrarily woke up at 3:30 this morning for reasons I cannot explain and could not get back to sleep. So I just played, I played Yakuza. I'm completely in love with this game.
Yeah.
I know I say this about all of them, but like, I think it has, some of the most it's all of the weird side charm I love about the other games, but it's totally front and center. And it's nice that it's not completely mired in kind of the existing lore, which can be a little bit of a little bit dense to get into. It is a game about losers. Like the main dude you play as is just a total screw up. It kind of starts out with some sort of Yeah, exactly. No, it's I get to yeah, no. but it's
don't insult Ichiban Kasuga. He's the best boy.
He's wonderful, but he's also like it's such a weird opposite, because like Kazuma Kiryu is like this, you know, unkillable heart of gold kind of noir hero, and then Kasuga is like a total doofus who is obsessed with Dragon Quest, which they kind of talked about this in some of the promotions. I didn't realize how deftly it would be handled.
Yeah.
This is a JRPG that is both celebrating JRPGs and also making fun of JRPGs by being one, which is Tom, you've been playing this too, right?
Yeah, I actually have played less than you, despite having been playing it consistently over the last 2 or 3 weeks. I'm about 15 hours in. And yeah, it's a blast. It's like really fun. And yeah, the fact that it's not just a JRPG, but the fact that like in it, Kasuga is like, yeah, like there's one moment really early on where his friend's like, hey, I wondered, sometimes in fights you hit a guy and then you just kind of stand there and let them hit you for a bit. And he's like, why do you do that? And Kasuga's like, oh, it's because I like to pretend like I'm a hero in Dragon Quest. And like, that's explicitly the reason for it being turn-based combat, is because Kasuga is pretending to be in an RPG. And like,
that's so great.
He openly makes references to them being in a party and they just all kind of like give him a side eye and they're like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, it's really funny. And even though it's really funny too, like the story is really good. Like it's really touching and emotional, and like Kasuga is such a dummy, but he's such a good-hearted dummy that I like can't like help but love him. Yeah, it's a really good game. It's a really fun RPG.
And I feel like it simplifies kind of the heart of what this series is, and really just puts it kind of forefront, where it's about a dude who wants to fight bullies. Like that's literally it. Like he just hates bullies and he just wants to like wail on them. I'm playing it with the dub on, which the same thing happened with Judgment, and I was like, you know what, I'll check it out, I'll give it a shot, and I haven't even felt compelled to switch it over. I think the voice acting is like really good, and they went to the trouble of like syncing all the mouth movements and everything, which is my whole weird problem with like dubbed anime is that you've got this like static mouth movement, and the people who are in charge of localizing are basically trying to shove words in that opening, which I think often means that you get this really jilted sort of writing and delivery, where it's like, I mean, the Dragon Ball Z thing where anytime anyone has their mouth open, they're like, oh, and it's insufferable. But in this case, they managed to actually fix for that. And it's not The Last of Us 2 facial animations, but it's like, it's not distracting, which I really appreciated.
They're good. I think the facial animations, yeah, you're right, not like Last of Us 2, but like they are good. And if you're a Persona 5 fan, and this is absolutely not an insult at all, because I agree the voice acting is great, but you will definitely get to play guess that Persona character, because a lot of voice cast carries over and crosses over in that.
I was going to say, like, for people who wish there was a Persona this year besides Royal or the Breaker, whatever, Breaker Morant, I think this is a pretty good like entry. Like I remember just, you know, giving Goldfarb shit and being like, Yakuza's Persona for boys. And anyway, he doesn't work at IGN anymore because he went to somewhere better. But no, it's like they have like very similar beats, especially now that it's a turn-based, turn-based openly JRPG. You go to school in this. Like there's a whole like weird like trivia college thing you have to do. You do like community college, and there's you know, weird stuff like business management where you
with your like party members, you upgrade personal skills. Like, yeah, it is very Persona.
And there's a job system, which is hilarious, where like normally, you know, JRPGs, it's like, oh, you get the thief and the duelist or like the mechanic or whatever. And in this, it's like, oh, you're going to be a waitress and you're going to be a break dancer and you're going to be like a construction foreman, which is just feels very like it feels very like Playmobil, like to have these sort of archetypal, like, you know, people you would see on the street, but they're the heroes. Like it's totally like working. It's a working class JRPG, and it's really it's phenomenal. So I say this every year, but like This is a really, really wonderful game, and I hope everyone jumps on and checks it out. Oh, also, I'm playing the PS4 version on PS5, and it still looks gorgeous. The load times are like just insignificant, but it occurred to me that the PS5 version comes out the week that my kid is due, so probably won't be able to play 20 hours in 3 days or whatever.
It'll be a little bit of a different schedule for you.
Totally will. Kids sleep all day when they're that young. That's when I platinum. I got through like 3 Bloodborne Let's Plays. Just
that's fair. I mean, this is definitely much more forgiving with pausing than Bloodborne. So if
that's good,
you know, turn based is good for that.
Very true. Before we wrap up, also Brian, anything you've been playing since we spoke last week? Anything new or just kind of along?
Cool. Not yet.
Fair enough. And I finally jumped into, after everyone was talking about it last week, started playing Immortals, which, man, I had really wished I had started playing before then so I could talk about Immortals. But I'm having a fun time with it. I think see both all the criticisms and all the like praise that it's getting on like both sides of it. So I really like the world. It's very pretty. Like, it is so great for photo mode landscape shots. It is just wonderful to like take in that world when you get a little closer. It's like, oh, I was just playing in Valhalla in a very well, finely detailed Viking village. And now this is just a very like much more not obtuse, but a little bit more. I'm abstract. Blanking on the word abstract. Thank you. I could not pull that word for some reason. A little more abstract, but I like it's very cheerful and it's very much like a go here and collect those 10 things. And it's very much just a like ticking the boxes sort of thing. But because it's so bright and cheery and the pig that I attack with my giant hammer poofs into smoke as it goes away, it's a fun, nice little like change of pace from drinking something from a random man in a Viking village and then waking up in a hole where other people had died. And then it's like, good luck finding your way. And he's like, why did that happen? I don't know. That's weird. But I'm enjoying both for the most part.
Jumping from one massive open world Ubisoft game rooted in some form of mythology to another one that is also that, is there any weird thing you catch yourself doing wrong constantly in?
Ooh. Well, so right now I'm doing both of those and Demon's Souls. So the fact that the dodge button is different from Demon's Souls to the Ubisoft games has definitely caused a few Demon's Souls deaths that I didn't need to have happen.
That messed me up too.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of difference in terms of like map viewing, because in Immortals you can basically like you have to click in R3 and then you can scan the world and you have to kind of like slowly move around it, and then as the controller's rumbling you hit R2 to reveal the thing, whereas with Assassins it's kind of just like if you're in a general area you'll get the like 10 things you need to get. So it feels like a weird step back there, but because everything else is sort of like streamlined, I'm spending much less time worrying about like numbers and the nitty-gritty of my arsenal. And it's like, I like that axe. That seems like a pretty good perk. I'll just go there. And it's like much easier to get into it for me than Assassin.
Yeah, you don't have to like embed a sacrifice stone into your like ankle amulet or something like that. Like it gets so nitty-gritty in Valhalla, which I dig. I mean, I appreciate it for that. But Immortals is way more just like, oh, cool, a new sword. What a good one.
Yeah, exactly. It's different levels of like depth, but I think that the lack of it in Immortals is not a knock against it. It just kind of lets me get into that very beautiful world much more quickly.
I've said this before. I really miss the sort of simple pageantry of new weapons in video games. And I think that we get this thing where it's not, you know, quantity over quality. It's like quantity to the point that you have to like do comparison shopping, like you're looking at nutrition facts to be like, which is the more damage per second? Like I got to look at this really carefully. And it's just, I don't know. I like it more when you're like rocket launcher. Whoa.
Yeah. I miss that aspect in Assassins, like the arsenal kind of like my eyes glaze over as I'm looking at it. I'm like, whatever the higher number is, sure, just go there. But I do like this Ubisoft trend of basically you can pick the weapon with the best stats, but give the look of it that you prefer. Mm-hmm. So being able to that seems so key to me, and I can't imagine not having that going forward in these types of games, but we'll see what the future holds. That's pretty much going to though wrap us up for this episode of Beyond. So thank you all so much for listening and watching. As always, Beyond is live Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific at beyond.ign.com, youtube.com/IGNBeyond, and your favorite podcast services around the world. Again, wanted to make sure, if you haven't already, please, please, please go check out Tom's Cyberpunk review. It is really well done. A lot of hard work on his part, and a lot of the team went into that. So please give it a look. It is well worth your time checking out. And congrats to you, Tom, on a really great review on top of just so many goddamn good reviews you've done this year. You're too good at your job.
Tom, go take a nap.
Yeah.
Go sleep. Okay. Max and Brian, anything else you guys want to shout out work-wise before we... Yep, he's leaving.
No, just if you head on over to jenkos.com and use coupon code Bandicoot, you can get the biggest pants that they've ever made. So go check those out. That definitely works. And I didn't make that up.
We are not officially sponsored.
Going to do Game Awards predictions? Because I predict they're going to put Crash Bandicoot in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2.
I like that. Brian, do you have a prediction?
I have. I think that they're going to put Tony Hawk in the next Crash Bandicoot game.
Tom, if you're sleeping, what's your prediction?
Kratos.
That's a good enough as a prediction as I could have hoped for. Have a good rest, Tom. And my prediction is PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale 2. It's happening. It's going to be real. Beyond. Thank you all so much for watching. Please be safe. Please be well. Please wear a mask. Be good to one another.
Please be beyond.
Beyond.
Good night, Tom.
Good night, Tom.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.